Joining us now, a man who's used to making things work. He was extremely successful in the private sector, and he's now trying to make it work in the Senate in Wisconsin. Senator Ron Johnson, with your Budget and Foreign Relations Committee, Homeland Security and Government Affairs, your plate is full, but I imagine every day it's a little bite out of Obamacare, correct?
Good morning, Brian. How are you doing?
Great.
Yeah, you know, one thing I've been trying to do is discipline myself to use the full name of this law, Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. I mean, that is Orwellian in origin. And let's face it, it's certainly not protecting patients, as we've seen millions of people, contrary to President Obama's repeated promise, they are losing not only their coverage, but access to the doctors and treatments that have kept them alive. And we're certainly not affordable. In Wisconsin, I think the average that I've seen was, if you're 27 years old, you're going to be paying about more than 100%, double what you paid on average for health care. So it's not affordable. An average plan for a family didn't go down by $2,500 per year. It's going up about $2,500 per year. So, I mean, it's a totally misnamed law. And so I want to use the name just to make sure that people understand really what a fraud Obamacare really is.
Well,
and I just made a mistake. The Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, I mean.
You just made that mistake again. So here's the president yesterday trying to rally the young people to get involved. Tell me if this is effective. Cut one.
If you're a student body president, set up a conference on campus. If you work at a nonprofit, open your doors and use your email list to help people learn the facts. If you've got a radio show, spread the word on air. If you're a bartender, have a happy hour. And also probably get health insurance, because a lot of bartenders don't have it.
What is this? I mean, are we down to anecdotes to supposedly motivate young people to jump on a plan that they, in most cases, can't afford?
Well, you know, young people aren't stupid. I mean, they don't want to have to pay double or triple or four times what they would pay in a normal functioning marketplace. And, you know, let's face it, young people also do value liberty and freedom. And I think they probably want the freedom to be able to choose the type of health care plan they want. You know, if I were young, I would be buying a high catastrophic care plan, you know, realizing that, you know, my body's in pretty good shape. And what I really want to do is protect myself against, you know, a serious accident or a serious illness. And you can buy high catastrophic care plans for a lot less than a first dollar coverage type of plan. But Obamacare forces individuals, whether you're young or old or group policies, to buy all kinds of additional coverages, you know, for example, maternity coverage for a 62-year-old woman. And that is driving up the cost of health care and making health care less affordable, contrary to the name of the bill.
Senator, you are a successful business person, which means you have to know when to let your men and women that you hire do their jobs and when you have to be hands-on, or else you go crazy, you become a workaholic, you don't have the balance. Having said that, how would you describe the president's managerial approach?
Well, totally detached. And of course, he doesn't know how to manage because he never managed anything before becoming president, which is a real serious lack of a job qualifications coming to become president of the United States. You know, managing the largest entity, the largest organization in the world is the United States federal government. And we have a president, and he's surrounded by other individuals that they're certainly political operatives, but they've never led, they've never managed anything, and it is showing, and we are really seeing it in the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act implementation.
You're saying the whole thing every single time.
It just takes too long.
It does. It's almost impossible. So where are we at right now? I want you to hear Eric Cantor say his response to when the president says, where are your ideas? Cut 12.
Absolutely. And the president knows we have ideas. In fact, we go back to 2009 when the Obamacare law was passed. All the Republicans in the end voted against that bill, but we voted for our alternative. And in fact, the alternative that we had was even enjoyed a Congressional Budget Office score, which said that our plan would actually lower the cost of premiums, unlike Obamacare.
I mean, he didn't get specific, but where are you at now? You're a problem solver. You went in there with your business background, not to be, you know, you just to make a difference. Well, so where do you go from here?
Yeah, well, part of the problem is that we have too many plans. There are so many proposals, and they're very detailed. There's all kinds of components. I guess what I've been trying to do is I've actually laid out a spreadsheet of the different proposals, whether it's Tom Price or Steve Scalise or Tom Coburn or Mike Enzi. We've got a lot of very detailed healthcare proposals, you know, that have been introduced as legislation, and there's all kinds of detail to them. But what I'm trying to do is simplify it. I really think at this point in time, we've got to look at, you know, Obamacare, you know what I'm talking about, is the law of the land. It's already done a lot of structural damage. We're going to have to start taking a look at, you know, how do we transition away from Obamacare into reforms that will actually work, that actually will improve quality, levels of customer service, and restrain the growth in costs. I mean, those are free market-based solutions. And, you know, what's a real shame about the health care law is that we were actually moving in the right direction. You know, I was in business. We were moving to higher deductible plans with things like health savings accounts, actually taking our premium savings, investing them into those health savings accounts. Though that's money that individuals own, so they're going to spend it wisely. That's how you increase quality. That's how you actually restrain costs. And, of course, Obamacare pretty well just, you know, cut that reform off at the knees. But that's the direction we need to go, is bring in the free market competitive system, allow purchase across state lines. You know, we can certainly, you know, make sure that people are guaranteed a social safety net so they have the catastrophic coverage so that they don't go bankrupt. There are a lot of things we can do, but we can do it with 20-page bills, not 20,000 pages of rules and regulation and law.
The GDP grew at 3.8%. Enough for you?
Well, if that were on an annual basis and we were doing that year after year, that would be a very good growth rate. But, you know, what you're probably seeing in the third quarter is people ramping up inventories, getting ready for holiday season. That, let's cross our fingers. Hopefully it's a robust holiday season. But, you know, we're battling just the demographic problem of baby boomers aging. They don't spend as much money. You know, we don't have a housing industry that's particularly robust because we have the bubble. So, you know, we have a lot of structural problems. You know, first and foremost, we have a regulatory burden in this country that is just onerous, and that is certainly taking a lot of entrepreneurs out of the business of expanding their businesses.
And I also saw the front page of the New York Times today. It says big businesses are prepared to start paying a carbon tax. They believe it's coming.
Well, that'd be incredibly harmful to economic growth. You know, what we need to do is everything, every policy of government should be to, first of all, limit its influence, limit the damage it does on the private sector, but it should be to promote growth. So we actually have to have regulatory reform. We should utilize our God-given natural energy resources so we maintain, you know, relatively reasonable energy prices. We need pro-growth tax reform. We got to repeal Obamacare, and we got to get our debt and deficit under control. I mean, those are, to me, the five elements of things we need to do to really promote a strong economy so people can get a job,
right,
and have the dignity of earning their own success.
Does your staff on Obamacare?
Pardon? Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. No, we're trying to follow the letter of the law. So I've got some committee staff that, because of the law, they get to stay on their federal employee health benefit plan. But most of my staff, including myself, are going to have to either go in through the exchange. Me personally, I'm going to just try and buy private insurance here in Wisconsin, because there's no way I'm going to be entering my personal information.
Right.
You made a great point. Amazon would not be in business if they forced people to give all their financial information before you could actually shop for their products.
I wouldn't do it.
That's absurd.
I wouldn't do it. I'm telling you, it would force people back into brick-and-mortar stores at a dizzying rate because, in these days in which you have a credit card in your pocket and still somehow someone got the number and is spending on it, which just happened to me, I wouldn't do it. So, Senator, finally, does it bother you that Harry Reid's staff is shielded from it?
Absolutely. And, of course, we're only hearing that anecdotally. I don't know that's been necessarily.
So it might not be true?
Well, no, I believe it absolutely is true. But, you know, David Vitter tried to put forward an amendment to make sure that every member of Congress has got to reveal exactly what members of staff are trying to, you know, be exposed to the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, and which are continuing to stay on their federal plan. And that's being blocked right now by the Democrats because they don't want the American people to understand the hypocrisy of their own actions.
Senator, how much would it mean to you to get the majority next year?
Well, it would mean an awful lot, I think, to America, because, you know, we actually would be serious about starting to solve our fiscal situation, getting our debt and deficit under control. Now, it'll also take a successful 2016 because we need a president that actually knows how to manage, how to lead, and is also serious about fixing these long-term problems. But, no, I mean, right now, you know, being in the minority in the Senate, you can't even get your bills voted on. I mean, the Senate is so dysfunctional. We haven't even passed an appropriation bill, Brian, in more than 2 years. It's the primary function of Congress is to authorize and then fund government activity, and Harry Reid's Senate doesn't even do that. So the dysfunction in Washington is real. Americans need to understand and believe with their eyes and ears and telling them, stop sending politicians to Washington that are actually dedicated to growing the federal government. We need to limit its size and its influence in our lives.
I want you to hear a little sparring session. I know you're Wisconsin and this is Detroit, but I think it matters because a lot of people are hearing what happened in Detroit with this bankruptcy and a court ruling that they no longer have to honor the pensions. That affects everyone from coast to coast. Listen to Ed Henry, what he feels though the president, he just asked Jay Carney a question. He never seems to get anywhere, but it's always interesting. Cut 21.
Is the president going to let Detroit go bankrupt?
Dad, I think that happened a while ago.
But didn't the president say in the campaign that it would be awful for Detroit to go bankrupt? He obviously helped the auto industry, got them back on their feet. That was a positive development, but it wasn't enough. And I thought in the campaign he said it would be horrible for Detroit to go bankrupt.
Well, I think that there is enormous hardship caused by some of the problems that have happened in Detroit, which is why this needs to be resolved between the city and its creditors.
So they went back and forth on this. I mean, the president said Detroit, meaning the auto industry, but he also said the city.
Well, first of all, Brian, the president didn't bail out Detroit automakers. The American taxpayer did. And one of the things we have to make sure is the American taxpayer isn't forced to bail out cities and states that also have made all these promises to their public sector unions, you know, because there isn't an arm's length negotiation between politicians that the unions help elect, you know, but the federal government, the American taxpayer, you know, simply can't afford and should not be asked to bail out cities like Detroit. I mean, that's going to have to.
But how do you feel about
what
do you do about the people who are retired now? They're 62. They think they're on a budget and they feel their pensions could be evaporating or be halved. How do you feel about that?
Well, that's part of the problem in the public sector unions, that they negotiated outsized contracts. They negotiated these defined benefit programs that the cities simply can't pay for. And so the best way to sort that out really is in an organized reorganization process of the bankruptcy code. I don't know any other way of doing it that would be fair.
Interesting, because it's going to be happening more and more, as you know, and we hope Detroit has a great year this year and is able to turn things around because a third of the city is basically vacant. Senator, thanks so much. Always great talking to you.
Have a great day, Brian.